Good morning. Every time I get up here, I get a few comments. Well, actually more than a few, about being not quite so negative. And I'm always reminded of a Woody Allen quote. Here's what Woody had to say. More than at any other time in history, mankind faces a crossroads. One path leads to despair and utter hopelessness. The other to total extinction. Let us pray we have the wisdom to choose wisely. There's an important difference between Woody and me, though. He was only kidding. But I'll try not to live up to your expectations today. The title of my talk is, Does the Arc of History Still Bend Towards Justice? Most of us know this quote from Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, delivered at the Lincoln Memorial in 1963. Here's what he said. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. President Obama has used versions of this phrase in several of his most important speeches, and it is now inscribed on the border of the rug that lies in the Oval Office. It is one of the most powerful and optimistic statements I know of. An arc of history that bends towards justice. What a comforting thought. It seems almost like a physical law, an inevitability as certain as gravity. If we but ride history's arc, we will arrive naturally, certainly, inexorably, at a more just place. Ah, but is it still true? Does history's arc still bend towards justice? And if not, why not? And what can we do about it? This, I would submit, is the central question of our time. Not simply a moral question, although it is certainly that, but an existential one. Our very existence may hinge on the answer. Hyperbole? Not really. We live in an extraordinary time. A time when our species' future on Earth is, for the first time, in question. A time when, at a minimum, the quality of our lives and the lives of our children and the generations that follow are threatened. A time when we must face down injustices of monumental and unprecedented proportions. Now I know what you're thinking. Here he goes again. Woody was right. He's peddling doom and gloom. He's probably going to talk about climate change. What a bummer. I knew I should have stayed home and cleaned that closet. But here's the other extraordinary thing about the time we live in. While we face challenges as great as any generation has ever faced, we have also been gifted with the opportunity and the means to solve them. To leave a legacy of hope, justice, and prosperity to the generations that follow us. I say we've been gifted because happiness, joy, fulfillment, and meaning are forged in the fires of this struggle to do good, to triumph over our basest selves, to realize our better angels. We do not transcend through comfort. We do not find peace by turning away from challenges. We find it by going through them and triumphing over them. And it is precisely this willingness, even joy, to engage in the great struggles that humanity has faced that has caused history's arc to bend towards justice. In his sermon to Temple Israel, Reverend King spoke about figurative mountains in which we have stayed too long, places of comfort that stand in the way of reaching a promised land. He mentioned materialism, greed, racism, war, and militarism as places we must leave if we are to move on to the promised land of justice, peace, and brotherhood. I believe we have one more figurative mountain before us that we must abandon. It is the highest and most daunting of them all, and therefore, it will offer us the highest rewards. It is the mountain of denial, the force that says, please, let me ignore this, the one that urges us to look away, to seek our own comfort when faced with another's injustice, the one that says, please, let me escape this awesome responsibility, this dreadful challenge, the one that says, let me dwell in comfort, pass this test on to those who come next. But we can't. To quote Martin Luther King again, we are all caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. What we do affects those around us and those who will follow us. So yes, I am going to talk about some uncomfortable things. Things like politics and income inequality, because they are matters of justice. And yes, climate change, because it is not only the moral and ethical issue of our time, but it is also one that is upon us now. It is a figurative mountain we must leave immediately. The fact is, we are, at this moment in time, in danger of traveling on a distinctly different trajectory, one that is not bending towards justice and hasn't been for more than three decades. Let's start with the fact that our democracy has fallen to a silent coup. We have been taken over, defeated, our voices neutered, our freedoms trampled, our democracy vanquished. These aren't the ravings of a paranoid. They aren't the hyperbolic statements of radical left-wing nuts. They are the conclusion of the most comprehensive study ever conducted by two of the most respected experts in their field. Their study, entitled Testing Theories of American Politics, Elites, Interest Groups, and Average Citizens, makes for frightening reading. Here's what they concluded, and I quote, when the preferences of economic elites and the stands of organized interest groups are controlled for, the preferences of the average American appear to have only a minuscule, near zero, statistically non-significant impact upon policy. They went on to note that the majority does not rule, at least not in the causal sense of actually determining policy outcomes. Take a moment to consider this. We, the people, have no say and almost zero influence on our governance. Let me say that again. We, the people, have no say and zero influence on our governance. We know this in our hearts. We know it when Wall Street and big banks escape any serious attempts to regulate them. We know it when our politicians, from both parties, spend more of their time raising money from the ultra-rich and corporations with vested interests than they do governing. We know it when 74% of Americans favor ending subsidies to big oil and Congress won't do it. We know it when 70% of us want legislation on climate change and we can't get it. We know it when 91% of us want to strengthen rules on clean air and drinking water and Congress proposes to weaken them. We know it when, after Orlando, 92% of the people supported a bill expanding background checks to online purchase of guns and Congress wouldn't pass it. We know it when 85% of citizens supported a bill barring people on the terrorist watch list from buying guns, and Congress couldn't pass it. Dwell on these last two bits of political pornography for a moment. Congress denied the vast majority of the people's perfectly reasonable, in fact, barely minimal, desire to keep assault rifles and weapons out of the hands of potential mass murderers because a few special interests opposed it and because we the people have near zero influence on our elected representatives. Does this sound like we're on the arc towards justice? And what has the oligarchy done with the political power they've accumulated since 1980? Given themselves an enormous raise at the expense of the middle class and the poor. This, too, is a moral issue. Most of us have heard the grim statistics, but let's look at a few. Since 1980, the average income for the top 1% grew four times as fast as for the 99%. The top 10% now take home half of all economic income. When it comes to net wealth, the divide is even starker. The 20 richest people in the country now have as much wealth as the bottom 50% of Americans. Globally, the situation is equally as bad. Oxfam's Broken at the Top report said recently, and I quote again, the gap between rich and poor is reaching new extremes. Globally, the richest 1% have accumulated more wealth than the rest of the world put together. Meanwhile, the wealth owned by the bottom half of humanity has fallen by $1 trillion in the past 5 years. Now, just 62 individuals have the same wealth as 3.6 billion people, half of all humanity. Statistics can put you to sleep. In fact, it looks like it's working out there for many of you. I may try and sell this as a non-prescription sleep aid. But if you'll bear with me, there's a graph that illustrates what I'm trying to say more clearly. But I can't actually show you the graph, so let me describe it to you. 90% of Americans averaged a mere $59 a year more in 2011 than they did in 1966. Let's put this on a graph with that $59 representing 1 inch. Now let's draw a line that would represent the gains of the top 10%. It would extend more than 163 feet. Now we'll draw a line representing the increase of the top 1%. That line extends for 884 feet. Now let's draw a line representing the economic gains of the top 1% of the top 1%. This line would be nearly 5 miles high. Income inequality is increasing, and the ultra-rich get more and more of the wealth of our nation that our nation earns, even as the number of households living below the poverty level increases. Does this sound like we're on the pathway to justice? And now climate change. A warming climate is already imposing enormous costs on the world, and it is disproportionately falling on the most vulnerable among us, the poor and the disenfranchised. I will spare you the litany of statistics I usually give on this topic. Instead, I will quote Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org, who said recently, and I quote, "We're used to war as a metaphor, the war on poverty, the war on drugs, the war on cancer. Usually this is just a rhetorical device, but this is no metaphor. By most of the ways we measure wars, climate change is the real deal. Carbon and methane are seizing physical territory, sowing havoc and panic, racking up casualties, and even destabilizing governments. It's not that global warming is like a world war. It is a world war. Its first victims, ironically, are those who have done the least to cause the crisis. But it's a world war aimed at all of us. And if we lose, we will be as decimated and helpless as the losers in every conflict, except this time, there will be no winners and no end to the planet-wide occupation that follows." And I would add, on our current pathway, that is, even if we meet the ambitious but mandatory goals in the Paris Climate Agreement, we will lose this war and we will impose unfathomable burdens on our children, their children, and their children's children. Does this sound like justice? Reverend King credits the source of his quote about the arc of the universe to Theodore Parker, a Unitarian minister, who said in 1853, "Look at the facts of the world. You see a continual and progressive triumph of the right. I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but a little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. But from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice." There's an important difference between Reverend King's version and Reverend Parker's. Parker tied his to the facts of the world and claimed to see a continual and progressive triumph of the right. And yet we see, over the last 30 years, the facts of the world suggest something else. They point to a steady erosion of our democracy until today the wishes of the people have near zero influence on politicians. They reveal a massive theft of wealth from the middle class and the poor by an increasingly small ruling elite. They show a culture that risks permanently impoverishing the next 100 generations. 53 years ago, Dr. King, in his address at the Lincoln Memorial, also said, "We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promise of democracy. The tranquilizing drug of gradualism. The idea that somehow faced with an acute emergency that threatens us all and all that we hold dear, the prudent response is a gradual, measured series of incremental changes. The assurances by our leaders that we can indeed jump the Grand Canyon in a series of 10-foot-long leaps. I said these challenges were gifts, opportunities. So let me explain. One of my favorite stories is A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Towards the end, Scrooge is visited by the ghost of Christmases yet to come, and he is shown a decidedly grim future, his own. Here's what he says to the ghost. "Before I draw near to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may be only? Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends, to which, if persevered in, they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus with what you show me." It is thus. The future I spoke of earlier is not inevitable, but our redemption lies in action. Now, earlier I said that the belief in the arc of history, that the arc of history bends towards justice, was an extraordinarily optimistic statement, that it implied an almost automatic mechanistic force which takes us to a place of justice as a matter of course. In the same way that water flows downhill, we travel towards justice. Reverend King knew better. In that same speech, he spoke eloquently about the struggle needed to render the dream real. Optimism is a funny thing. Psychologist Martin Seligman, author of Learned Optimism and founder of what is called positive psychology, has studied optimists for decades, and here's what he's found. Optimists outperform pessimists in all areas of life, save one. They make more money, they live longer, they have happier marriages, they're happier themselves. The only thing they don't do as well as pessimists is predict the future. Optimism is the expectation that things will be okay. I believe optimism is one of the reasons we've tarried too long in the figurative mountains that Reverend King warned us about. Oh, yes, our economic system just isn't just, but it'll be all right eventually. Yeah, money has too much influence on government, but it's not that bad. Or the biggest self-con of all. Sure, climate change is bad, but it's not really a war. Things will work out. No, they won't. Now is not the time to ride history's arc towards justice. It is the time to seize it in hand and bend it ourselves. And now is not the time for the siren song of complacency that too often accompanies optimism. But neither is it the time for despair or pessimism. Now is a time that cries out for hope. Hope inspires action, not complacency. It challenges us to see the dragons before us as they are, not as we wish they were. And it invites us to slay them, even when the odds seem overwhelmingly stacked against us. It is the force that stands at the starting line in every race ever run. It is what enabled David to defeat Goliath. It is the most powerful force on earth. But to harness it, we must first acknowledge the nature of the challenges we face. Only then can we unleash the power that is within us to solve them. So to me, it is not our fate to ride history's arc. It is our challenge to bend it. The first step in that effort is to not look away, to face the future and the futures that await us with courage and hope, not false optimism born of blind faith in the ultimate justness of the universe. The world we live in will only be just if we make it so. The arc of history will only bend toward justice if we make it so. I said earlier that we had the means to solve these challenges. We do. Look at the platform of one of our major political parties. For the first time, it calls out income inequality. It promises to end the influence of money in politics. It promises to take on the threat of climate change. Look at the Paris Climate Agreement. While the goals aren't adequate, it still marks a staggering achievement. the acknowledgement that by all the nations of the world that we must act to address climate change. Look at our technological achievements. Solar and wind now cost less in many markets than fossil fuel, and their cost is plummeting. The price of energy storage is coming down just as fast. Some of the best cars on the road don't use gasoline. The pieces are in place. We can build on them. But we will not realize their promise unless we, the people, take these words and this potential and fight to make them real so that we may once again bend history's arc towards justice. Am I hopeful? Yes. As Paul Hawkins said, when asked if I am pessimistic or optimistic about the future, my answer is always the same. If you look at the science about what is happening on Earth and aren't pessimistic, you don't understand data. But if you meet the people who are working to restore this Earth and the lives of the poor, and you aren't optimistic, you haven't got a pulse. What I see everywhere in the world are ordinary people willing to confront despair, power, and incalculable odds in order to restore some semblance of grace, justice, and beauty to this world. Let us join them. Thank you.